Episode 2, The Lambo Lawyer Stole My Girlfriend. This is Peter Larvak.
Basically, I haven't told many people these stories. Most people don't know about them, but there's witnesses to back it all up.
Mm.
In this story, we call him The Lambo Lawyer. He's actually a barrister. And that's important because barristers make a shitload more money. Enough to pay for a bright yellow Lamborghini that costs $500,000. Pete's still a practicing barrister, and even while we're recording this podcast, he was defending a man accused of rape. In this episode, you'll hear anyone that knows Peter, the haters and the lovers, say the same thing. He might dress like a bum, but he's a bloody good barrister.
Solicitors and barristers are both lawyers. A solicitor deals directly with the public, and I'm talking about the criminal justice system. If someone's in trouble, they go to a solicitor's office directly, talk to a solicitor. He gets instructions, prepares the case. Then a solicitor will then brief a barrister to do the work in court. So the barrister's the mouthpiece. He's the guy that goes to court, cross-examines witnesses, calls evidence, addresses the jury, deals with the legal arguments before the judge. So the barrister is the mouthpiece. The solicitor is assisting in the preparation of the case and the running of the case.
It's a day rate for a barrister.
Oh, mate, I normally charge $5,000 a day.
$5,000 a day.
I won't get out of bed for under $5,000 a day. Some barristers charge $10,000, $20,000, even $30,000.
What's the fascination with the law?
There's only one area of law that's worth doing. In my book, that's criminal law. All the other stuff is batshit boring. I couldn't do conveyancing or civil law or commercial law. Criminal law is where the action is. I've done over 100 murder trials, and every one of them have been fun, prosecuting and defending. I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Peter actually didn't want to be a lawyer. He wanted to be a doctor, but for lots of reasons that didn't work out, mainly because he was more interested in chasing girls than he was chasing grades. He told me that law is his least favourite activity. He's got other things that he loves much more, like himself.
What I do these days, I pump iron in the gym every day and I race my Lamborghini. They're my main interests.
Mm-hmm. And defending?
Defending.
Criminals.
Do you know what? It's interesting you ask me that, because out of all my favourite activities, law would be right down at the bottom of the list. Right down the bottom. And there are several reasons for this. Number one, I think that our criminal justice system is seriously broken. The second reason is there are a number of judges and magistrates on the bench who have no business holding judicial office. Fortunately, they're only a very small few. But when you've got a guy like that on the bench who's an obnoxious, arrogant bully, it takes all the fun out of a trial. I sometimes mentor younger barristers and younger solicitors, and they've confided in me that when they have to appear before a particular judge or magistrate who's a renowned bully, they have to go to the bathroom first and throw up. Now, that shouldn't happen in the workplace. And the only way to deal with bullies like that is stand up to them. And that takes all the fun out of a trial when you're butting heads with an arsehole like that on the bench.
And the solicitors and barristers that are listening to this would know who those people are.
Everyone knows who they are. They know who they are. When they listen to this podcast, they'll know exactly who I'm talking about.
Yeah. And of course you wouldn't mention who
they are. No, I can't. I can't.
What would happen if you did, Peter?
Oh, I'd be sued for defamation. I can only mention this in the privilege of Parliament. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it outside Parliament, no. But it's a shame, because individuals like that, and thank God there's only a small few, they take all the fun out of a criminal trial. Criminal trials are good fun. I love nothing more than a murder trial.
Peter fancies himself as a bit of a ladies' man. Now stay with me here. Sure, right now he's a 70-something-year-old bloke with the cream bun stain on his black top, dishevelled hair, tracksuit pants, but in his day, he was a good-looking rooster. There's an image I've seen of Pete standing next to a Harley. He's got his shirt off, bulging muscles, tanned, chiseled face. Let's just push pause here for a moment. In every episode, Peter gets to hear them before they get released. When he heard that last bit of the podcast about that he used to be a good-looking rooster, Peter wanted me to alter it to say, I think he's still a good-looking rooster. We didn't agree on that change, but we did agree that I would change it to say Peter thinks he's still a good-looking rooster. Let's call it a compromise. Either way, in past or present tense, Peter had model good looks. Peter told me he actually did do some modelling work. That was between the acting and the pro wrestling. I kid you not, Peter was a pro wrestler. Let's cut to you at uni. You end up going to Sydney Uni.
Sydney Uni, studying medicine.
Yeah, not studying law. So no, talk to me about medicine.
My original plan was to be a doctor. I got a very good pass at high school and I was admitted to medicine. And I studied medicine for 3 years. One of the big things that happened to me at uni at that time, I met an amazing guy named Richard Drake, who was a champion wrestler. He was one of Australia's best wrestlers. And I bumped into him in the gym one day at the HK ward where I was pumping iron. And Richard taught me how to wrestle. And he changed my life enormously. He had a big impact on my life. He not only taught me how to wrestle, he taught me how to fight. And he taught me how to never, ever take a step backward. And that guy has had a massive impact on my life.
So, Peter, wrestling in those days wasn't the WWE that we see.
No.
This is proper wrestling.
This is fair income, yep. Proper wrestling. This was amateur wrestling, which they do in the Olympic Games. I had aspirations of getting to the Olympics, but that never happened. I wasn't good enough. Later on, I switched to pro, professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. So I wrestled pro for about 2 years under a very renowned promoter named Hal Morgan, who had a stable of wrestlers at that time. And the reason I did that, I was trying to put myself through uni. I used to fight sometimes 3-4 times a week. It was pretty good money,
yep.
Much better money than I would have earned in a 9-to-5 job. And by wrestling at night, I was able to do uni and studies in the daytime. When I was pro wrestling, it was very interesting because I was constantly carrying injuries because you have to learn how to fall properly, but I was constantly injuring my elbows, my knees, but that was more than made up for and compensated for by the women who used to wait outside the dressing room after a match to give me their phone numbers. That was pretty cool. One guy was waiting outside one night. This was particularly interesting. And he had a girl with him who he introduced me to as his 19-year-old daughter. And he was obviously a big fan because he's shaking my hand and telling me how great I was in the ring. I was sweating, covered with sweat, rippling muscles. So he was obviously very impressed. And he told me how much his daughter loved it as well. And then, to my astonishment, he then said to me, look, take my daughter out for a drink or coffee somewhere. I'm going to go home. You young kids have some fun. So I was pretty amazed that this middle-aged guy is pimping out his 19-year-old daughter to me, a guy he'd never met, only seen in the ring with glistening, sweating muscles, and he's introducing me to his young daughter. And I suspected it was not just for my pleasure and her pleasure, but I think also for his pleasure. I think he got a kick out of that.
It's like hearing one of your mates sit around at a bar telling stories of how good he was back in the day. When you hear those sorts of stories, you might think, that's bullshit, that never happened. But as we researched Peter's story, all of his stories are true, every single one of them. I'd like to introduce you to Brian Kilworth. Now, Brian is what Peter would call a hater. He's not a fan of Peter, and there's a pretty good reason for it. But before we get the Lambo lawyer's side of the story, let's chat with Brian on how he and Peter met.
Well, it's going back a long time, but it's virtually a love triangle. In 1965, when I was called up for national service, I was with a girl, and she was at university. And then when I was going to Vietnam, she came back into my life, and we had a whirlwind relationship, and it was full on in commitment. And I went off to Vietnam, and I got daily letters from her for about 6 months. And suddenly, as you would imagine, it came to an end with a Dear John letter. And I saw her on the first day when I returned from Vietnam, and she told me she'd met this guy. He was doing medicine at Sydney Uni, and she'd gone back there as well to do pharmacy, and she was pregnant.
So to recap, Brian met a girl, had a relationship with her, and then went over to Vietnam to fight in the war. While he was there, his girlfriend met another bloke and got pregnant with twins. And when Brian got home, she called it off and went off with her new man. Guess who that new man was? That's right, Peter Larvak, the Lambo lawyer. The weird thing is, Brian and Peter didn't know each other back then. And 50 years later, in some sort of weird sliding doors Gwyneth Paltrow moment, they meet. Peter continues the story.
And then when he finished the story, I looked him in the eye and I said, "Mate, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I'm the other guy."
I said, "Well, Pete, you can stop right there." I said, "I know all about you." I said, and as a joke, I said, "While I was in Vietnam fighting my queen and country, you were banging my girlfriend." And he said, "Man, we're brothers." He said, "We're blood brothers." I'll never forget it. So he was absolutely intrigued by it all and has been ever since. And every time I see him, I suppose he quite often wants to talk about that.
A pretty identical story. Peter's not added much GST to it. It is how he says it was. And Pete doesn't mind telling the world that he stole Brian's girlfriend while Brian was off fighting the war.
Yeah, but he goes to lengths to say that he said, "I didn't know anything about you. And, you know, and if I had, I certainly wouldn't have done it," which was absolutely bullshit, because he's got such an ego that nobody can get in Peter's way. I mean,
let's pause for a moment and learn more about the girl on the trampoline. The girl on the trampoline is the same girl that Peter ended up having twins with. The same girl that was originally going out with Brian Kilworth. Pete's good mate, Bill Dawson, explains the day they met.
Oh, God. It's vaguely in my memory. It wasn't as important to me as it was to him, apparently. But I do remember it. I was in there that day, and the trampoline was over in the corner where the boxing ring should have been. This girl, you know, watching the people jumping up and down, and said, "Do you want to get on?" "Yeah, right, I'll get on." So she jumps on. All the boys standing around the trampoline, getting a good view up a dress. Yeah, I walked over and had a look and thought, "Oh, I can't look at this. I'm a good Catholic boy." I walked away. But Peter was obviously taken with it because, he was taking this girl out. I can't think of her name. Yeah, so he whisked her away after that, I believe, up to the Fisher Library. Deepened their relationship, shall we say.
Is that the same girl that Peter ended up having kids with?
Yeah, she had twins, I believe.
How do you know Peter?
Oh, well, I used to go down the gym, and at the time I was just doing a bit of weight training. Later on I did a bit of amateur boxing, but at that time I was just doing some weight training. And Peter was down there doing the same thing. He was into this freestyle amateur wrestling. He was pretty good at it too, you know. I think he was on the shortlist for selection at the Olympics sometime after that. I remember seeing him wrestle down at Brighton. He changed his name to Peter Wayne. And the girl shrieked, you know. So he looked the part, you know. So he was pretty muscular. Girls loved him. He loved himself.
So not much. So not much has changed.
No, it's been a one-sided love affair all his life. No, he's a great bloke. Actually, you just got to not taking him all that seriously, you know. Well, he's fair dinkum. If he doesn't like you, he won't have anything to do with you. You know, he's always been like that. And, oh, we're very similar, I suppose. I'm not narcissistic. I'm probably the other way around. So he makes up for my deficiencies. But, no, Peter's good.
Peter and Brian are regulars around Manly in Sydney. And from time to time, they run into each other at the local cafe.
I'll often see him, and you can guarantee that if he calls me over, it's to tell me a story about himself. You know, and it's all life's all about Peter, and that's he's a self-confessed egomaniac. He doesn't shy away from that, and I respect that. You know, if I'm with friends having coffee, right, when he shows his head. They all turn away. They don't, you know, and ask him not to. Please don't bring him over here. You know, so he doesn't enjoy a great reputation around town. But look, he's certainly a character.
Now, this is not supposed to be a character assassination on our Lambo lawyer. It's just to show the difference in what he drives, how he acts, what he does for a living, and then how his friends and enemies see him.
Well, he's described by most people as a bum, as a homeless person. He wears tracky dacks summer and winter, and in the winter a jumper, and in the summer a t-shirt, and that's repeated. That's in probably the same pair of shoes. Fashion, I wouldn't think, is part of his makeup. He just does the rounds in Manly. He's on his push bike or something, or sometimes he drives his car, the big yellow job, into the middle of Manly and parks it there all for show.
Ryan tells us some of the good bits about Peter.
Most people wouldn't agree with me, but most people don't know him. And periphery people who don't know him, he's quickly, easily picked as a target for them because they don't understand him. So I'm certainly not a Peter hater.
Now remember, Brian is on that list Peter gave us, the list to offer some balance, the list to show some of the people who don't like him. But Brian was pretty surprised by this.
Now that surprises me because he mentioned the other day, he said, good, might get a call. He said, and there's some people on the list, because the podcast wants balance, don't like me. And I've always, when he was going to do the Insight program on narcissism, he told me about that. And he said, I'm going to tell that story about you and I and the girlfriend. And he said, don't worry about it. There's no names mentioned, but quite complimentary to you. I would consider that he considers me a friend.
In a future episode, we'll find out more about that girl, the mother of Peter's twins, the children that were adopted, how the relationship with those kids is now, and also Peter's other son that we mentioned in episode one. But right now, Brian tells the story of Peter going to talk to the parents of his newly stolen girlfriend.
And I said, well, okay, what's going to happen about that? And she said, well, he's coming up to see my parents and sort things out. Of course, things weren't sorted out. Peter did see the parents and told them in no uncertain terms that wasn't part of his plan, and so she had the children adopted out, two twins.
Maybe we should leave the last words to Peter.
Brian Kilworth is the guy whose fiancée I stole when he was away fighting in the Vietnam War. So he's got every right in the world to hate me and resent me.
And you still see Brian today?
Occasionally I bump into him. He's very friendly to me on the surface, but I think deep down he hates my guts.
If I said try to be more humble around people, then I don't think that'd work anyway. You know, look, and he's not an aggressive person. He would love to be loved. adored by, you know, people in the village of Manly where I live. If you walk past, he'd like to think that those people respected him. The advice, I don't know if I could really think of anything that he might take on board. Or
in the next episode of The Lambo Lawyer, Peter saves lives.
And as I looked out to sea, I'd see two dark heads bobbing up and down in the boiling sea, quite a long way out, and I knew we had a rescue.
Saves the judge.
And the prisoner suddenly spat the dummy, jumped out of the dock. There was no glass protection there or anything. There were no guards around him. And he jumped out of the dock onto the bar table. From the bar table, he jumped onto the floor and started sprinting towards the judge, screaming, "I'm going to kill you, you old cunt."
And has a near-death experience.
Small lesion on the prostate. Luckily, it was early stage, low grade.
That's next time on The Lambo Lawyer.
If I was less kind, I could be highly critical. I could call him egocentric, narcissist, maniac.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.